Now, as we go to air this Tuesday, the High Court is preparing tomorrow to hear a case, the first of its kind to reach this court. And it will be a case which focuses on public servants and free speech. In 2012, Michaela Banerjee, who worked for the then Department of Immigration and Border Control, was sacked. She was sacked because under an anonymous Twitter handle, she constantly tweeted her criticism of Australia's asylum seeker policies. Among those sitting in court tomorrow, closely listening to the legal arguments, will be Kieran Pender. He's a visiting fellow at the Australian National University Centre for International and Public Law.
This is really a case about two competing public interests, a public interest in an impartial and apolitical public service and bureaucracy, which is essential to a democracy such as ours, and a public interest in the individual rights of citizens, including public servants, and the benefit of including public servants in political communication and debate. And it's how the court will reconcile those two very compelling interests that are very much in conflict, which will ultimately determine the outcome of Comcare and Banerjee in the High Court.
So who is Michaela Banerjee? Back in 2013, she spoke to the Law Report about her tweets.
Essentially, it was about the Refugee Convention and asylum policy. A lot of the tweets were simply information about the Refugee Convention. I didn't ever defame anybody or I didn't reveal confidential information. This is about being able to be free as a private citizen to make political comment in my own time.
So you were critical of government policy, though?
Oh, definitely. Well, I have a conscientious objection to what is happening with asylum seekers.
Now, people listening to this will be thinking that there's a clear basic principle. If you work for an organisation, you should not criticise it or the people who work for it.
Yes, that comment has been made to me, and I understand that perfectly in a situation of private business. But it's different for public servants. Public servants are not like a salesperson for a telephone company. Public servants have a responsibility to the public as much as they have a responsibility to their employer. In fact, their employer in a representative government is the public.
Michaela Banerjee speaking back in 2013. Kieran Pender has been following the twists and turns that led the sacked public servant all the way to the steps of the High Court of Australia.
Michaela Banerjee was in 2011 a public servant with the Department of Immigration and Border Protection, as it then was, now the Department of Home Affairs. And she, in May 2011, joined Twitter. And she did that under the pseudonym La Legale. And she proceeded to tweet very frequently. In fact, within a year or two, she tweeted 9,000 times. And a lot of that was against the government, and particularly against the government's border protection policy. So one news article described her commentary as suggesting Australia's treatment of asylum seekers was unlawful, immoral, and destructive. She tweeted, you know, to Scott Morrison, to Jason Clare, to a whole range of politicians suggesting we were, as a country, in breach of our international law obligations in the way we treated asylum seekers. This never would have come to the attention of the public if it wasn't for the fact that the department in 2012 realised that it was Banerjee, their employee, that was sending these tweets, and they proceeded to terminate her for breaching the APS code of conduct.
There was one tweet, I think, which said, when a nation state permits 86% of detainees to suffer mental health problems, it is hashtag fails and understanding hashtag it's not welfare, end of tweet. So there's a kind of lots of pointed jabbing attacks at Australia's asylum seeker policy.
And her tweets were often inflammatory, and some of it was personal vitriol against senior public servants and politicians. But her tweets were all, as I said, anonymous under this pseudonym, La Legale, except for one. So in 9,000 tweets, the government could only point to one that had been made during work hours. And when this ultimately went to a tribunal, they pointed out that she'd been very careful in not posting during work hours. So from her perspective, this was all completely distinct from her employment with the department.
I mean, she was working in the public affairs or communications department of the then Department of Immigration, wasn't she?
That's correct.
So she was investigated by the department and they discovered that it was her, and then they sought to terminate her. And I understand at that point she sought an injunction to prevent her dismissal. She did that in the Federal Circuit Court, and this was unsuccessful, wasn't it?
So she went off to the Federal Circuit Court to seek an injunction to prevent them from terminating her, and at the same time went to the Fair Work Commission, Fair Work Australia as it then was. And those applications were unsuccessful. In, I think, August 2013, the Federal Circuit Court said this expansive right of free speech that she had alleged in her pleadings didn't exist in Australia, and that the department could terminate her employment.
So she fails at that point, but now what, 5, 6, 7 years later, she comes back and her case will be heard by the High Court tomorrow. What is that case and what is the argument at the heart of that case?
So after she lost her injunction application, she was terminated and she suffered an adjustment disorder characterised by anxiety and depression. So she lodged a Comcare workers' compensation claim. On internal review, it was unsuccessful, and she went to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, and there she had much more success. So the department argued, Comcare argued, that it wasn't a workers' compensation injury because her termination was reasonable administrative action in light of her tweets and her alleged breach of the APS Code of Conduct. And the tribunal found that wasn't the case. They said the implied freedom of political communication found in the Australian Constitution made that law invalid, and therefore it couldn't represent reasonable administrative action. That judgment came down in early 2018, and its language was quite significant. It described the termination of employment in these circumstances as akin to George Orwell's 1984. So certainly...
Thought crime, I think it was.
Yes. Sent some arrows towards the government. The Comcare appealed, and the Federal Attorney General, Christian Border, intervened to take the case straight to the High Court.
So it doesn't have to go through the Federal Court. Everybody recognises this is an important issue and we need to sort this out quickly. Look, I'm really interested, Kieran. Previously, she'd run similar arguments and she'd been unsuccessful in running those previous arguments around freedom of expression, implied right to political communication. They'd failed at the Federal Circuit Court and the Fair Work Commission, but she's running them again and they've got up at the AAT and they're going to be run at the High Court of Australia. Why the difference?
The difference is for several reasons. Firstly, that was an injunction application, so it wasn't given the due consideration it might otherwise have been, and the courts deferred and said ultimately if she wants to proceed with a constitutional challenge, that's for a different forum, not the Federal Circuit Court. And her pleadings in that first case expounded a very broad interpretation of the implied freedom, which was very removed from what the High Court had said in other cases existed. So when it went to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, I think she was represented by lawyers in that instance, and they had a much more narrow and contained argument and really focused on the anonymity aspect, that she was not identifiable as a public servant, and as such, the connection with her employment here is fairly slight. And that was what really got her over the line in the AAT and could be determinative in the High Court.
The main argument is that she was tweeting anonymously and therefore not undermining her role as a public servant. Is that right?
Exactly. And the tribunal, Deputy President Humphreys and another member, they said that you can't draw into the policy arguments in favour of limitations on public servant free speech, things like the need for impartiality and apolitical values in the public service, when there's no link, there's no visible link. Now, the Commonwealth disagrees with that argument and has put forward a number of submissions in the High Court saying that this bright line between anonymous and attributable conduct doesn't exist, and you can't infer that from the legislation, and that will ultimately be for the High Court to decide which side of the line it falls on.
Very interesting. Look, Michaela Banerjee worked in the public affairs or communication section of the then Department of Immigration, and that office, it's focused, its job is to shape or frame public debate or conversation, put a spin on things, right? Could the argument be that she's not just expressing an opinion here about issues that she feels strongly about? She's actually undercutting the work of her own office, the actual section of the department in which she's working.
Exactly, and that's an argument that the Commonwealth is making in its submissions. Section 1311 of the Public Service Act at the time, and still essentially does, subject to some minor amendments, that says that public servants at all times must uphold the APS values and the reputation of the public service. So to the government, in their submissions, they're trying to suggest that that's a very context and content-dependent obligation on public servants. So they say the way you would treat someone working in public affairs or a senior diplomat or someone commenting directly on their areas of work is different to how you might treat a junior administrative assistant in a department commenting on entirely unrelated matters. Now, that sounds like a very attractive argument because, as I said, there are very compelling arguments as to why we need an impartial public service. But on the other hand, public servants don't become second-class citizens when they sign up to be a public servant. They don't sign away their constitutional rights and protections. The problem is that delineation between different classes is just absent from the words of the Code of Conduct from the Public Service Act. The government is trying to read in an approach that isn't really available on the plain wording. And so that leaves a dilemma for the High Court, whether they accept that and really bend the wording of the Act, try and fit this fairly pragmatic approach, or whether they say, no, this has to face up to the constitutional consequences of a very expansive obligation you're trying to impose on your 200,000-odd public servants.
And of course, this is all in the context of social media, where everybody has a platform and everybody has an opinion. How have similar cases been decided when they've come before Australian courts up until this point in time?
This is the fourth such case in the last decade and a half that's come to the attention of a court or tribunal. The precedent-setting case occurred in the early 2000s in a case called Bennett, and that involved a customs officer who was also a member of and a spokesperson for his union. And he was punished for his union-related media activity, and he went to the court and said, that's unconstitutional. And at that time, the implied freedom of political communication was still a relatively new concept that had only been developed in the early and mid-1990s. And he was successful. And Justice Finn of the Federal Court in Canberra, he said, you know, I know this obligation has been on public servants for almost 100 years, but I don't think it's constitutional. So he was successful. Then fast forward to 2016, and a Centrelink employee had anonymously been saying things on public online forums, criticising policy and procedure in Centrelink. He was fired, and he also won his unfair dismissal case in the Fair Work Commission. On the other hand, a slightly different context, there was an army reservist called Bernard Gaynor who had articulated a number of what some might describe as homophobic or Islamophobic public comments. And he was a Senate candidate at one point, and his commission with the Army Reserves was terminated. And he won in the federal court at first instance challenging that, and it went to appeal. And the full federal court said, no, the way you have to assess the constitutionality here is different to the way the federal court did it, and ultimately found for the Defence Force. And he was refused special leave to the High Court. So the law is divided between these different cases. Partly that's because it's very context specific, but partly there's underlying disagreement as to the approach the court should be taking here. And this will be the first time the High Court has had a chance to consider this fairly complex and difficult issue.
And it has huge implications, doesn't it? I mean, it has huge implications for, if you like, the freedom of expression of hundreds of thousands or millions of Australians.
Exactly. So there's about 240,000 Commonwealth public servants which will be directly affected by the outcome of this case. And then there's potential broader indirect implications for state and local government employees. So cumulatively, that makes up 16% of the Australian workforce. And that's certainly one argument for why we shouldn't be too draconian and uphold draconian limitations on political expression, because it's such a large segment of the Australian population, and excluding them from public discourse is quantitatively detrimental. There's also a qualitative degrading of discourse, because ultimately it's often public servants who are best placed. They've got specific expertise and they can add important insight into how policy matters should be thought of. So if the government fines for the Commonwealth and rejects Michaela Banerjee's challenge to the constitutionality of this law, it could have significant negative ramifications for public servants wishing to weigh in on political matters.
And if you take the Commonwealth line, finding in favour of Michaela Banerjee could potentially leave us open slather to public servants making all sorts of derogatory comments about people and policies, and that would impact on the public confidence in an impartial, neutral public service.
There's a famous quote that the hard cases make bad law, and I think there's a real risk that the complexity on these issues and the complex facts in dispute could really give rise to some headaches for the High Court. And part of the problem here is that the law of the implied freedom of political communication, our sort of free speech protection, hasn't developed in this particular context where it's an individual decision in dispute. So most implied freedom cases are challenges to legislation, to broad legislation, whereas here it's one decision made under that legislation by an executive decision maker. And the law as to how the methodology for going about that challenge just isn't clear. There's a real lacuna in the law. And so that means the High Court has to decide, well, how to do this before it actually goes about the process of doing it. And that gives rise to a lot of concerns.
Mm. Finally, Kieran Pender, this conversation, we've been focusing on the public sector. Do the same issues apply to the private sector?
They do, although not to the same extent. The public service have these particular rights because the implied freedom constrains the government in their actions. It's arguable, and there have been a number of cases where people have teed off and criticised people on Twitter or social media against private sector employers. And in those cases, often the issue is whether you can fire your employee if they're tweeting in their own time. So it's not so much a constitutional issue, but it's about the bounds of employment. And if, you know, if you're sitting at home on your couch and you criticize something that your boss doesn't like, does like, is there enough of a nexus with employment? And that's the key issue. So similar concerns, but slightly different takes on it because of the constitutional limitations on the government and its approach.
Kieran Pender, he's a visiting fellow at the Australian National University Centre for International and Public Law.